You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Hi, y'all, and welcome to Horsin' Around. Saddle up and get ready to have a darn tootin' gallopin' good time as we trot out the show that's your ultimate horse source, of course. Find out how to use good old horse sense when it comes to breeding, feeding, training, and explaining. From practical tips on caring for your horse's health to advice on how to buy horse supplies, including bridles, halters, saddles, and more. So get ready to start horsing around with your host, horse expert, and award-winning rider, Audrey Pavia. Howdy, Audrey.
Welcome to Horsing Around on PetLifeRadio.com. Thanks for joining us. This week, we're going to talk to a young woman who made an amazing journey on horseback, traveling 6,000 miles across two continents with only two horses for companions. That woman is Marianne Dutoit. Originally from South Africa, Marianne was living in Ireland when she decided to challenge herself by learning to ride and then embarking on this incredible adventure. We're going to talk to Marianne and find out what it was like for a novice female rider to travel from Argentina to New York alone. We'll be right back with Marianne right after these messages.
Why the long face? I reckon Horsin' Around will be back in the saddle right after we round up a few words from our sponsors. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Having a rough day? Longing for the dog days of summer? Think your fun furry friend lives a dog's life? Well, find out everything you're begging to know as Pet Life Radio presents It's a Doggy Dog World with pet expert and award-winning author Liz Palaika. Every dog has his day, and you'll find out how to make your dog's day fun and rewarding every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Flight 291 is now boarding. All passengers, please proceed to gate 4.
And who's this traveling with us today?
This is Bailey. She's never flown Midwest Airlines before.
Hi, Bailey. She'll be fine. We take special care of our traveling pets. In fact, our premier pet program was created by an employee and dog lover who believes that pets should be handled as precious cargo. And they are. Oh, and they earn travel rewards, too.
Oh, good.
Thanks for flying Midwest Airlines, Bailey. Enjoy your flight. Visit MidwestAirlines.com.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggy's duffel bag, and that's Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city, and state reviews, and doggy destinations to explore with your furry companion. Fido Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Pet Boutiques, and Fido Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.FidoFriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Fido Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
We know you're chomping at the bit to hear more horsing around. Well, we're back on the trail. So park yourself over yonder and set a spell. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Welcome back to Horsing Around. I'm your host, Audrey Pavia, and we are here with Marianne Dutoit, author of the book Crying with Cockroaches, which details the story of her cross-continental trek on horseback. Marianne, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Audrey. Thanks very much for having me.
It's great to have you here. First off, tell me about your journey. What countries did you travel through?
Well, I decided, actually, that I wanted to explore Latin America, and that was going to involve, ultimately, North America as well. I started in Argentina, and I went through Bolivia after that, and then Brazil, and a big part of it was like through the Amazon, and part of that was on a boat through the Amazon, and then Venezuela, I made actually the decision from the very beginning that I wasn't going to travel through Colombia, given the situation there, and that it's just not really very sure. And I think my mom would have been far too worried if I told her I was going to attempt even to go through Colombia. So I ended up flying the horses. I was looking for a boat, and we couldn't find the boat. So from the top of Venezuela, Caracas, which is the capital, we ended up being flown by one of my sponsors. I was just very lucky. I didn't realize that they actually fly horses. They were a courier company like FedEx, like what you have in the United States. And DHL was actually my sponsors. And they ended up flying us to Costa Rica. So from Costa Rica, we went through Nicaragua, through a small part of Honduras, just the kind of the southern part, El Salvador, Guatemala. Sadly, I couldn't get through Mexico, and I do write about that in the book, and there was just an awful lot of red tape and bureaucracy and everything else. So I was adamant that I didn't want to finish and that I still wanted to do a part through the United States. So I ended up going then from Georgia up the way, South Carolina, North Carolina, all the way up to New York City. And that's where I actually finished the trip then 21 months later.
And what prompted you to make this journey?
Well, Audrey, I don't know. It's hard to say what exactly it was. I think, well, I know I've always been somebody that really liked to do adventurous things. I was always somebody that, you know, if you dare me to do something. And I did a cycling trip through Europe in 92, not knowing anybody, and just basically going from town to town and pitching my tent in people's gardens and asking for help. So I always knew that I wanted to do something adventurous. Again, I kind of always admired women who do these great things and charity trips and going to exotic places. And I always thought, well, you know, if they can do it, why can't I? And I was at a time in my life where I didn't have a husband, I had no mortgage, I really had very few commitments, and I just thought, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. And my only belongings were probably a piano and a camera that I had, so it was kind of easy just to pack up and go.
I was really amazed when I was reading your book to find out that you had very little horse experience when you decided to do this. Tell me what your horse experience was prior to the journey.
Well, it was really little, and I'm not exaggerating it in the book, because when I told my dad that I was going to do it, and he had this look of incredulity on his face, and he just said, you know, but you can't ride a horse. And he was absolutely right. He was a very good horse rider. My youngest brother was a very good horse rider. I've always loved horses, but I wasn't a great rider. I always had this kind of fear for horses. I've always loved them, but I just was never really comfortable around horses. And I remember when I was young and, you know, you'd actually get on a horse and, you know, your brothers go, so you kind of want to show that, you know, you know something about horses too, and you're not that afraid. And the moment the horse starts to run or gallop, I would just jump off. So I was never really comfortable with horses, but I just knew that this trip, I wanted it to be on horseback. I didn't think initially that it was going to involve two horses. I just really, from the start, when I thought I wanted to do this adventure, I didn't think it was going to take 21 months. I thought maybe one horse, 3 months, somewhere in some exotic location and doing whatever kilometers a day and, you know, chilling out and seeing new places and new faces and everything. But it just ended up kind of taking a life of its own. And it was really after having read Chifley's book, the guy who in 1925, he was a Swiss explorer. He went with his two horses from Argentina to New York. And I read the book and I just thought, that's it. That's what I want to do as well. And so it really just, everything changed after I realized, but it was just going to be on such a bigger scale than what I initially envisaged.
I imagine that once you got into it and you started being around horses and seeing what it's like dealing with horses, especially under those circumstances, you probably realized you had no idea what you were getting into.
Well, that is very true. I mean, and you're probably from having read the book, I mean, the disasters that I had with saddle packs and things. And, you know, you have to get used to the horses, and you have to know what they spook for and what makes them afraid. And there was just so much involved. I mean, I wasn't afraid in the sense that if I didn't know something, and believe me, I knew very little, I had no problem asking people for advice. And you could see even when I was in Argentina, you know, some people rolling their eyes thinking, oh my gosh, you don't even know that. They wouldn't say that, right. But you know, you could see it on their faces. And some came right. Very close to actually saying it. And you know, one or two did actually say, what are you doing? But at the same time, I knew that it couldn't be that difficult. I knew that I would ask if I was unsure. And that I kind of explained it in the book as well. I really thought as well that I had an intuitive thing with the horses. And I think I've had it always with animals. And their well-being was really my top priority. And yes, it was an arduous journey for them as it was for me. And there were days when we were cold, and there were days when we were hungry, and there were days when we were really, really tired. But ultimately, every single day, their well-being was my concern. I didn't mind if I went hungry or if I had to go cold, but I just wanted to make sure after a day's ride that at least they had a safe place, they had a place like if they wanted to lie down that they could, and they had food to eat. And it's amazing actually when you're thrown in at the deep end how quickly those skills and things that I thought I didn't have a clue, but so much of it just comes to you, and it comes to you out of necessity. It's almost like a survival thing. And you know, I had the best intentions on this journey in on so many levels, and just to have experienced that bond with the horses on a day-to-day basis and getting more accustomed to riding a horse, having another horse on tow, which is the pack horse, but then your relationship and how they trust you, and you can lead them into places where they wouldn't go with anyone else, but they go with you because you've spent all these months with them. And that for me was just always so heartwarming to know that they have this incredible trust in me.
I know that is one of the most amazing things about being with horses is when they learn to trust you. It's just, it's almost a spiritual experience.
Absolutely.
And tell me, where did you get the horses you used on the trip?
Okay, yeah, they were a specific breed. When I read Jeff Lee's book, he mentioned this breed that he used, and they're called Criollos, and you spell it C-R-I-O-L-L-O. And they are horses from the Patagonian Pampas. They're not big horses. They're a little bit bigger than ponies, really, but they're incredibly sturdy. They've got great, great endurance. They have really accommodating guts, and you know, they can have almost something different to eat any other day. But they also really, really sweet personalities as well, and they're just really placid kind of horses. So I knew from the very, very beginning that I was going to use Criollos. And for the majority of my journey, I had Criollos. And actually, Misha, who was one of the original horses that started with me in Argentina, she finished the journey with me, and she trotted with me as we went through Central Park. And she's back in Ireland now. So they're just really incredible horses. She's the only mare that I actually use on the journey, and I'm really keen for her to have a foal. And of course, I would love for it to be with another Criollo, which there are none of in Ireland, so that might prove to be a little bit of a headache. But they're just really, really wonderful horses, very, very special kind of personalities.
You had several mounts on the journey. Can you tell us about them?
Yes, I had Tosa was the first horse that started with Misha, and sadly he was diagnosed with equine infectious anemia in Brazil, and the law in Brazil is that the horse needs to be put down. You can't even keep the horse in isolation, which is not really a life for a horse anyway, but you're forced to have the horse put down, and which was actually the really the hardest part of my journey, and really the only time that I thought, is this really worth it? Because you just feel such responsibility and guilt, because I just felt I brought him there, and you know, Misha was clear and she wasn't sick, and he got the disease, and it was most probably from the horse flies as we went through the tropical parts in Bolivia. So I found a replacement horse. They told me he had Criollo blood in him. I doubted it. It was in the middle of the Amazon, and there really wasn't much choice when it came to horses. But I chose him, Tufane, I called him. And I really chose him because he was very nervous, and I had a suspicion that he hasn't been treated very well with whoever had him prior to me buying him. So I always kind of have this tendency to go for the underdog. So I just thought, no, I'd love to have Dufresne. And he proved to be a challenge as well. And it took weeks for him to trust me and even just to take food out of my hand. And he was really just very, very suspicious. And with time, he just really got used to me and his whole demeanor and personality changed. And very sadly, in Guatemala, he was diagnosed with spiroplasmosis. I actually had to send the blood before we went into the United States, both their blood, Misha and Dufresne's, I had to send to the United States because nowhere actually in Central America are there labs who test for spiroplasmosis, which is the tick-borne disease. And sadly, he was diagnosed as positive and he had it both in its worst form. And I just remember having contacted and written and phoned so many different vets in different parts, literally of the world. I spoke to vets in Ireland and in South Africa and in the United States, and they all felt that given that he had both in the worst form, it's Babesia, I think, Equi, and then another one. But even the medicines that you could give to them, you have to give to such toxic levels that often they suffer so much just from the medicines, and more often than not, a lot of them die from the high doses of the medicine. So I had to make the heart-wrenching decision to have him put down. So those things are really ones that, you know, you don't anticipate when you think about a journey like this. And of course, my dream would have been to have the two horses that I start with, that they finish with me ultimately. But, you know, I just had so little control over those things, sadly. And, you know, all you could do was just pick up yourself again and stay positive and continue. And that's what I did.
Right. Okay, we're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, I want to hear about your scariest moment on the journey. So stay tuned.
Why the long face? I reckon Horsing Around will be back in the saddle right after we round up a few words from our sponsors. Attention passengers, please fasten your seatbelts, put your seatbacks and sleeping pets in their full upright position, and prepare for takeoff.
Pet Life Radio presents Travel Tales, the show where you'll get great travel ideas on perfect places for you and your pet. From Paris to paradise, south of the border to the South Seas, Travel Tales will give you cool tips on fun vacation destinations to travel with your pet, pet-friendly hotels, and advice on how to travel safely and happily with your furry best friends. So, get ready to pack the bags and the bones with your Travel Tales hosts, Susan Sims and Nicholas Veslowski, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Ready to take a walk? Not just you, but your whole family. It's the 2008 Whisker Walk, Sunday, June 8th from 9 to 4 at the Lancaster Fairground in Lancaster, Massachusetts. Pet owners and animal lovers walk to lend a paw to benefit the animal shelters and pet charities they love. Come see exhibits, demonstrations, educational programs, special attractions, product giveaways, entertainment, auctions, raffles, food, fun, and things for adults and kids to see, do, and buy, both human and pet-related. Whisker Walk 2008, a fun day for everyone. For more information, log on to whiskerwalk.org.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet Magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet Magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No. To my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
We know you're chomping at the bit to hear more horsing around. Well, we're back on the trail. So park yourself over yonder and set a spell. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Hi, we're back to Horsing Around with Marianne Dutoit, author of the book Crying with Cockroaches, which details the story of her cross-continental trek on horseback. Marianne, what was the scariest moment you had while you were on the trip?
The scariest. Well, there were a few scary moments. I was held up and I was chased by my own machete. And they were very scary moments. But actually, now that you're asking that question, I'd say the scariest would have been when I woke up one morning at 6 o'clock and I actually woke up with a bad feeling. I just had this omen that something bad happened. And I walked out, and the horses were gone, and they were kept in the yard. And I write about that in the book, but it was just really, really awful, especially when people started to tell me that maybe we should start looking at the local abattoirs, because most likely the horses would have been sold, not for the use of to ride them, but actually for their meat. So it was just devastating for me, and it's just a feeling that I never, ever want to have again. And the horses were found initially, and they were stolen, but just everybody went into action, really. It was a small place, and the local army was asked to help, and they had an advertisement on the radio with, you know, sound effects of horses' hooves and everything. So the whole town and surroundings and everybody knew what had happened, and about 7-8 hours after they were reported missing, we did find them. But I'd say that was probably the scariest moment on the journey. I mean, often, yes, I had to go in the dark with the horses, and it's just me and nothing else. And, you know, you might see a light flickering in the distance and you think somebody's watching you, or sleeping alone in a tent at night. And, you know, often in the kind of isolated parts, we would go for hours and you just wouldn't see a soul, and you wouldn't find a village or a house where you can stop and ask if you could pitch the tent. And you just have to stop on the side of the road and just hope for the best. And 4 o'clock in the morning, you hear voices, men's voices. And, you know, they were all scary moments. But I always said that if I was going to do this journey and being afraid, I might as well not do it, because it really takes away from your experiences. And I think it's almost like a bit of like a negative energy if people kind of see that you and feel that you're fearful, and often you draw bad experiences to you. But at the same time, I knew I had to be careful and keep my eyes wide open.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, a woman alone, and, you know, in some of these countries that with just two horses, you know, the horses, as you know, horses will, they'll run. They're not like a dog who's going to stay there and defend you. They'll take off.
That's very true. It's not like stay and they stay.
Right. They're I'm out of here, you know. What was your most wonderful moment on the trip?
Well, you know, every day was just rich with so many incredible moments. I mean, of course, every day was a challenge as well. And for me, just having gone through these places, and I think what made it so amazing for me was the fact that I've never gone through these places, I've never visited these countries, and you just go through this most spectacular scenery. I mean, Bolivia really, really stands out in my mind. I just absolutely adore the silence and the isolation and just absolute tranquility. And often I would just think to myself, whenever will I have that in my life again? Because life is just so hectic. And when will you ever just have such peace again? I do remember one incident, though, and you're asking about, you know, a special moment. And it was in Argentina. And I had just left the city of Tucumán, and just the day before, there was some publicity in the local paper, so everybody kind of knew about the girl and the horse, and it's a kind of a big city. And as I was making my exodus out of the city, and I had about 50 kilometers, which is about 35, 38 miles to do that day, which is a lot. It's like really all-day riding. People kept on stopping me and wanting to chat, and somebody brought his son to have a picture taken, and then he came back again because he wants to be in the picture now, and he brought somebody else to take the picture, and it was just constant. And I finally reached the outskirts of Cordoba, and I had been like on the road now already 2-3 hours, and I could still see the city behind me, so I've made no progress. And I was trotting along, and I heard the voice of somebody yelling my name, and I could just see across to my right this young girl, and she couldn't have been older than about, I'd say, 7 or 8. And she was running and roaring my name. And I just thought, I'll be damned now if I stop. I'm not going to stop again because it just will never end. So I kept going and she kept going. And I just didn't have the heart to continue to ignore her. And finally, she caught up with us and she was completely out of breath. And she just stood in front of the horses and she gave me a card. And it said, God bless you. Welcome to Argentina. And she just had the loveliest face, and she asked me to write my name on her hand because obviously she wanted to go back to her friends and her family and say, well, this is the girl that was yesterday in the paper, and she wrote her name. And for some reason, that girl just really, her face and everything and her whole demeanor just really stayed with me. And throughout the journey, I think the one thing that really stood out for me would have been children and their response to seeing me for the first time, and you could see how it affected them, and the big smiles and just this kind of total acceptance, not having any agenda for wanting to talk to you, but just real curiosity and wanting to be part of what you're doing just for a very short while. So that really stood out for me throughout the journey.
What would you say that you learned ultimately from this voyage?
I think I learned a couple of things. I think a few things were reinforced for me and a few things I learned. I think that the biggest thing I learned was probably patience, because you have to have patience when you go at such a slow speed, and you know, there's just no rushing things. You just can't do it. And then you're in a country where there is this kind of manana, or in a continent where everybody's like, yeah, manana, we'll do it. And you just really, really have to go with the pace of everybody around you. So I definitely had to learn patience. And I think what was reinforced for me, but really I knew this before I started, and it's just really the goodness of humankind. So many people were so worried about me doing this trip. And, you know, I didn't just foolishly jump into this. Of course, I had my reservations, but I always had in the back of my mind, I knew that people will help me. And I knew, yes, there were going to be struggles and challenges and setbacks and everything else, but ultimately I would be able to depend on people to help me. And yes, I did the journey alone, the riding every day, but almost on a daily basis, I needed people for so many different things, board and food and just, you know, looking after, giving me a place to stay and the horses and making sure that they were safe. So for me, it was just like so many people, it seemed as if so many people were just waiting for an opportunity to actually do good. And then you arrive on their doorstep and they just receive you with open arms as if you're the long-lost daughter that they haven't seen in many years. And you're strangers. And yet they take you into their houses and they trust you. And for me, that was just incredibly heartwarming. And with the exception of a few dodgy people on the way, and, you know, you have them everywhere, the majority of people were just really absolutely wonderful.
Well, that's really great. And I want to know why you named your book Crying with Cockroaches.
Audrey, I tell you, it's a short answer. There was a lot of both during the journey. And that really sums it up. In a way, the cockroaches were also symbolic, you know, of the basic and the primitive conditions that I had to go through and live through. And it's probably symbolic as well of, you know, some people that might not have been as honorable as you would have liked them to be.
I heard the cockroaches are very big down there too.
Oh, they are, and they fly. I mean, I've never seen a flying cockroach until I got to South America, and I just thought, no, they're supposed just to crawl. You know, you don't want them to fly, but they do.
Crawling's bad enough. We don't need them to fly. This is a great book. I really enjoyed reading it, and I think any horse person would just have a wonderful time with this book, because the fact that you went into it with so little horse experience and became an incredible horsewoman by the end of the journey is really a whole adventure in and of itself, aside from all the stuff that you went through. So
that's true. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed the book, Audrey.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. I want to thank you, Marianne, for being my guest this week and sharing your experience with us. And we are going to have a link to Marianne's book on the show notes page of the PetLifeRadio.com website for Horsing Around. So if you'd like to check out the book, you can go there.
And if any listeners have any comments or questions about Horsing Around, please email me at Audrey@PetLifeRadio.com. Until next time, happy trails.
Stop what you're doing and start horsing around. Every week on Pet Life Radio, horse expert and award-winning rider Audrey Pavia will be trotting out great tips on feeding, breeding, and more on everything equestrian. So set a spell and say hey to Audrey and get ready for a darn tootin' galloping good time. Every week on Horsin' Around, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.